had to give you their love. My mother and father, and Marvin and Edith, and their family, Johnny and Barbara and Jerry and Cindy. Brother Nicholas, brother and sister Alvin Harris. To mention a few that I can think of right off the top of my head, but not to leave out any of the rest either. Also, our loved ones in Phoenix, as we visited there briefly, sent their love to you, and also our brothers and sisters in Los Angeles, Marion Warren and Disciples. Let's see, who else was there? Bill Gould and the Weavers. And last, perhaps, that we saw along the way was Brother and Sister Richard Wheaton. Want us to be sure to give you their love and to tell you that if it was all possible, that they would be with you next Sunday here. And certainly we want to greet you for ourselves. It's indeed a pleasure to be with you. I thought again as I thought of our occasion here this morning of a little thing that happened maybe a week ago Friday morning there in Phoenix as we were preparing to leave. We sat down for our breakfast meal in the home of the Karrises, and Brother Karras had already gone to work, and Sister Maureen returned thanks at the breakfast table. And one thing she said was, and it stuck with my mind, and I presume it always will, she thanked God for our association together and the avenue that brought us there. And I thought, that was a beautiful saying. What was it that brought us together? It was the gospel of Christ, the kingdom of heaven that brought us together. Truly it was blood kinship, perhaps, that helped us make up our mind to stop by Phoenix, because we do have some relatives there, as we do here. But it's that kinship in the gospel that makes our stay so beautiful. And I don't want my blood kin to be offended by that either. But it's that gospel tie that makes our association together what it really is. And that includes all those who have taken upon them the name of the Son of God, even Jesus Christ. And so we do rejoice this morning. I hope that my words, what few they may be, will be an encouragement to you, because that is my only desire, that in some way I might encourage you along the way. I feel that the things that transpired this summer has brought us all closer together across the face of this great land. I know that many of you were praying for our needs back there, and we have prayed for your needs here. But feeling the influence of your prayers and the many inquiries that came made us feel close together. And then when we saw the increase of the blessings of God, our hearts swelled within us, and our joy, as Brother David read to us in the beginning of Sunday school, just flowed over. At one time, I remember telling our people there in Independence, at the height of our, I guess, the anxiety and concern for Linda, that I had a joy in my heart, and a peace. And I was sure that if I would try to explain it to someone outside of the church, they would say, well, if you feel that way, you just don't understand the problem. But it was true. In spite of the great weight and the anxiety, and perhaps I might be overemphasizing that word anxiety, because even with the concern, there was a peace that took away a lot of the anxiety. I had that peace and that joy, because I could see and feel the power of God. I have chosen for a scripture some readings from the 13th chapter of Matthew. Again, the kingdom of heaven is likened to a merchant man seeking goodly pearls. But when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. And I'd like to drop then down now from, or I guess let's go back to the third verse. And he spake many things in this parable, saying, Behold, a sower went forth to sow. When he sowed, some of the seed fell upon by the wayside, and the fowls came and devoured them up. And some fell upon stony places where they had not much earth, and forthwith they sprung up, because they had no deepness of earth. And the sun was up, they scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. And some fell among thorns, and a thorn sprung up and choked them. And others fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30-fold. Who hath ears to hear, let him hear. Disciples came and said unto him, Why speakest thou unto them in parables? And he answered and said unto them, It is because it is given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. For whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever hath not, from him shall be taken away even that which he hath. Therefore spake I unto them in parables, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, By hearing ye shall hear, and shall not understand. By seeing ye shall see, and shall not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull in hearing, and their eyes they are closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For verily I say unto you, that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see the things which ye see, and have not seen them, and to hear the things which ye hear, and have not heard them. Hear ye therefore a parable of sower. For when one heareth the words of the kingdom, and understandeth it not, then cometh the wicked one, and catcheth away that which was sown in his heart. This is he which received the seed by the wayside. But he that receiveth the seed into stony places, the same as he that heareth the word, and anon with joy received it. Yet he had not root in himself, but dureth for a while. For when tribulations and persecutions arise because of the word, by and by he is offended. He also that received the word among thorns is he that heareth the word, and the care of the world, and the deceitfulness of riches, and choked the word, and he become unfruitful. But he that receiveth the seed unto good ground is he that heareth the word and understandeth it, which also heareth, beareth fruit, and bring forth some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. I thought that these readings fit very well as with the Sunday school class. I did not feel to elaborate on it at that time. And also with Brother David's reading in our Sunday school class, these are the things which make that joy. The hearing of the word and feeling it grow and being able to bear that fruit to the glory of God. And yet, as we read these things, I'm quite concerned because of the things which we read here about where this seed fell, that it all did not grow and produce fruit. It had fell by the wayside. We can see in our day today that it really does seem like our words which we speak fall upon deaf ears. And the things which we see so plain by the evidences of God's hand, other eyes cannot even see, nor your mind understand, that God was there. And yet to us, as I spoke a while ago, it just makes our soul fill with joy and overflow to the extent that we want to praise God and to glorify Him and let the whole world know that God lives today, as He did when Jesus walked and when He spoke these very words by the Sea of Galilee. And yet, they do not believe that God can do those things today that He done then. And when you tell them, they just don't seem to hear or understand. I had a short conversation one time with a young fellow I worked with. We had a radio program back in Independence one time, and it kind of fell through, and there are probably various reasons why it did. But I mentioned this to this fellow I was working with, and he said, "Well, you know, anybody that believes in divine healing is going to be rejected." That wasn't his exact words, but that's the best I can repeat his thoughts. And so it is that we saw in the very beginning of this great Latter-day work that it was rejected because it was said that it was given by the hand of an angel. And so it is many times our words are rejected because we say that it was by the hand and the power of God. And yet in the next breath they may tell you that God is their strength and their salvation, and that salvation come only through the grace of Jesus Christ. But they will not acknowledge that God can work those mighty miracles in our hands, in our presence and in our lives. And yet, at one time, the doctor that was working with Linda, when he told her he'd be gone for a week after the crisis and everything seemed to be leveling out, I don't remember just how the words went, but Irene mentioned something about that we needed to keep praying, and he said, "Yes, we need to keep praying." It was quite evident that he had done all that he could, and he knew he had done all that he could even before then, and God had performed a miracle. He stood by and he continued to do all that he could, but he knew, and his expression was that, not so much in what he said, but the way he cared for her, that he depended upon God to pull her through. And he did. There's another reading in the sixth chapter of John that I would like to read to us this morning. I won't read all of it because I don't want to spend too much time reading. But here in the sixth chapter, John had, starting about the 53rd verse, he had talked to them about giving unto the people his flesh and blood, his flesh to eat and his blood to drink. And on down later, he said, "If you do not partake of my flesh and my blood, you have no life in you." We take that for granted, don't we? But this was an offense to some there. They said, "Well, how can he give us his flesh and blood to eat?" And perhaps if we was there, we might have been a little bit hard to understand too. But because of this saying, some of them turned and walked no more with him. Let's start then with the 66th verse. "From that time many of the disciples went back and walked no more with him. Then Jesus said unto the 12, Will ye also go away? And Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom shall we go? Thou hast the words of eternal life, and we believe and are sure that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Wasn't that a great assurance? We could have read the other two verses there, but I felt they somewhat changed the thought that there was one there that he had chosen that didn't follow him, that didn't measure up. In fact, Jesus called him a devil. Peter says, "We know and are sure that thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." I would like to share with you some of those things, if you don't mind, that caused my heart to overflow. It transpired in the midst of this great anxiety. Linda lost the baby that she was carrying. The problem began late in May. About 2 weeks she laid in bed, or almost a month, I guess, she laid in bed, determined that she would do all that she could to preserve that life that God was forming. And the time came when she had done all she could, but still the life was gone. At the first time when she first went to the hospital and the problem first arose, Irene went to be with her. I took Brother Nicholas Denham and went down. We ministered to her, and Brother Nicholas bore testimony there at the hospital that evening. One that perhaps many of you may have heard, and maybe you have not. It's one that we have in the past have heard many times. We have a sister, or had a sister, she's passed now, who lived in South Missouri most of her life. Her last days were spent in Kansas City, Kansas, because that's where her daughter lived. But she had a very burdensome and troublesome life. By that I mean things were not easy. She lived in right on the border between Missouri and Arkansas. Her life is sometimes not easy to begin with, but her family made it very difficult for her to exist and to live and to keep her faith. But she did. The story that Brother Nicholas told was that he was down that way in his work one time, and he went to visit her, or the group there, the people there, and especially Sister Paul, just hoping to encourage him and to visit with him for a little while. But he was told where to go. It was not to Sister Pogue's house. It was the lady with the name of Sister Klein. And he went there in his first arrival. And he had never met her before, but Dad had described her to him and told him what she would do. And she was sitting on the front porch when he walked up. And he said, "Are you Sister Klein?" He said, "Yes." And, "You're Brother Denham." And he was somewhat troubled because he hadn't told him he was coming. He said, "We've been waiting for you all day," and this troubled him even more, or at least giving him some concern, because, again, they didn't know he was coming. She said, "Well, how did you know I was coming?" He said, "Well, Brother Case told us that you was coming." He said, "We've been waiting for you because Sister Pogue is laying in a bed at home, waiting for a room in the hospital to have her leg removed. She had diabetes and infection had set in." And so he told Sister Klein, he said, "Well, now, I didn't bring any oil with me. Do you have any?" And she said, "Yes, I have just a little bit." And he brought her a little bottle of oil that she had there in the house. And he took her and went to the home of Sister Poe. And there they found her laying on the bed with her leg swelled. She was a large woman, but her leg was twice the size or so that it should have been, and black and blue, and had an open sore there, if I remember the story right. But then it said his heart just sank within him when he saw the sight. And his desires toward God was extreme. And yet he felt, you know, who am I? Yes, who was he? He was a servant of the living God. He anointed her head, but before he did that, he asked one of the sisters there to take the oil and to anoint that leg with oil, and he turned his back while they did it so that there'd be no embarrassment there. And then he administered to her. And they said, well, would you administer our daughter? And she was laying on a bed in another room, and the condition in the home was not the most pleasant thing in the world, because the father just had nothing to do with it all. Or such a close husband. He went in the room and found the girl, a teenage girl, laying on the bed there, and he ministered to her, and he never did know what her problem was. But today she is living, I believe, in St. Joe, Missouri. He visited for a few moments, and he had to leave because his work in another town called him away, and or you know, the need, the appointment, made it necessary that he leave, and he left with a burden in his heart. And I want you to realize that the words that I say are as I have heard them and felt them, and the words that are mine, because I don't have Brother Nicholas's words. About 6 weeks later, in his sister Aldrich, who traversed back and forth between Knoll, Missouri and Independence, she had homes in both places, was there in Independence, and Brother Nicholas met her and said, Sister Aldrich, said, how is Sister Poe? And she said, well, didn't you hear? He said, no, I have not heard a word. I just know that she was waiting to go to the hospital and have that leg removed. Sister Aldrich said, well, they didn't operate. The leg healed up and she never went to the hospital. She lived, at least 20 more years. She had other problems and she had ministered too many times. And she still had that leg when she was laid to rest. On our way home that evening, because we just stayed a little while and we both went back because I had to go to work the next morning. Irene stayed. But Brother Nicholas said, do you think I said too much? Do you think I give them a false hope? Now this may sound like Brother Denham's faith was weak. No, it wasn't weak. And I can understand what he said, what he meant, and how he felt. His concern was to build him up for a big letdown, which in the face of it might look like happened, because about 4 weeks later, she lost her baby. But my reply was that no, I would never tell anybody that a testimony like that was giving someone false hope. I don't know what should be said, and it's not for me to say. And he said what he felt directed to, and we'll just leave it in God's hands. I tell you that story because it bore fruit many days later. But before that happened, at the time that the baby died, it was about, I forget, I could go back in my notes and tell you the exact dates, but that's not too important, I don't think. But a short time later, after we was called again, at the time she lost a baby, Brother Denham, and my father went to minister to her that day. And she was, they ministered just before she went in to have the sonogram, I believe it was, or whatever they did, to confirm the condition of the baby. And she said she was not given the assurance at that time that the baby was all right. In fact, I guess because of what she could feel within her own body, she knew it wasn't all right. But she was given that peace, that calmness that only God can give. It was about, I don't know what part of a week it was that she stayed in the hospital after that time. The baby was dead, and they gave her shots that caused it to be born. But it was on a Sunday, at least almost a week later, that she returned home. And I was there at the home with we knew that she'd be coming home that day. Terry's another thing had happened too. I might go back to the day that the baby died, or they found out the baby was dead. Linda was laying there on the bed waiting for the medicine to take its effect, and she said to Terry, don't be bitter. I couldn't stand it that he was bitter. And his reply was, bitter? Why should I be bitter? And he wasn't. He didn't say much. Each time that we would kneel in prayer from time to time, he would kneel with us and pray. Prayer of faith. Anyway, on the day that Linda returned home, Terry's parents were there, and we were waiting the noon meal. And shortly we began to eat before they got there, but then Terry came and Jenny went to meet them and greeted them, and they helped Linda, who was very weak, to a chair, and she sat down. She asked someone to put Jenny on her lap, which we did. Jenny, who is 2.5 years old, was born in February 2 years ago, so she was not quite 2.5 years old, had been cautioned throughout the month that had transpired previous to be careful not to bounce the bed or to bounce on Linda to do anything to complicate problems, and so she was very careful. She was aware of what was going on and why the need was. The first thing she said when she patted her mother and said, is my baby better? Of course, this was just a little bit more than Linda could bear at the moment, and she cried, and she said, no, our baby died. And Mommy's very sad. Little Jenny jumped up and almost in hysteria said, no, not my baby. My baby's not dead. And she ran in the kitchen in the other room in almost a frenzy. She turned around and went right back to her mother and says, my baby's up there. Jesus. And that will make Mommy happy. And it did. Linda said, up to that point, she wasn't really sure whether a life of the age of that one was really alive in the sight of God or not, or whether it was a soul. But God gave that little 2.5-year-old girl a testimony that the whole world should hear. And the problems and anxieties that we are in today, in the, what I think most of us consider slaughter of infants, this little 2.5-year-old was given the surety that her little baby brother, who was only about 5 months in maturity, was a soul in the sight of God. He was given a name. This did give Linda much peace and much joy. But Jenny never forgot it. It wasn't just a passing thing. Though I wasn't able to be around her that much to hear her, but Irene has told me that hardly a day would go past of what Jenny wouldn't repeat, that her baby was in heaven with Jesus. She hadn't been told this story. God gave it to her. It's hard for some of us older ones to understand death and dwelling with God in heaven, but she seemed to understand very well. The other testimony I want to tell you was that we went back to the original story. A few days later, possibly a week, infection set in and complications began, and Linda was returned to the hospital. And they decided that they were going to have to remove the organs that was infected. And at this time, a call went out, and I don't know who all received the request. It was a great need for prayers. But I know it went far and wide, and we want you to, each of you, to know that we appreciate your prayers, because they were heard. They were heard. And they increased the faith that I have. And I want to return the testimony so that your faith might be increased as well. But we know not when there might another need arise. Needless to say, we need each other's prayers daily. We need the Spirit of God daily. Because all of our temptations are not as significant as these. Not all of our problems and our trials. But at this time again, we return to Linda's bedside, and I received a call of my work about noon. Irene called me that the doctor had told me, about 11:45, I believe was the exact, that they was going to have to operate. They was going to go to surgery at 2 o'clock. And that's a 2-hour drive from Kansas City to Emporia. No matter how you want to drive, it's just 2 hours. I knew I couldn't make it no matter what, and I couldn't get away even, I didn't think, but I put in a call to get my permission from my boss, and he had just went to lunch. Well, supervisors of that area, the job, they don't get 30 minutes like I do. He called back at 2 o'clock. I told him my problem and asked him if I could leave a little early, realizing that she'd already gone to surgery, I thought. I put in a call to Sister Joyce Harris because I tried to keep her informed the best I could of things going, because I was very hard to get a hold of. I was coming and going and outside working, trying to keep things up most of the time. So I'd always call her almost every day, and that way when people called, I did get a hold of her and find out how things were going. It was most uplifting and a great blessing to hear and to all those who did call to find out about her. But I asked if Brother Alvin could go with me, and Joyce gave me his number at work. I called him, and he said, well, it was Friday, and Friday was a busy day, and he couldn't get away before 3:30. And I said, okay, I'll pick you up at 3:30. And this is before I'd ever got a hold of my boss. I made this arrangement. So when my boss gave me permission at 2 o'clock, I still couldn't go. And just a few minutes later, his assistant walked in the office where I was and went to another phone and called and came back and said, I understand you have to leave. I said, go. I'm here. I'll take care of things. You just go. I said, well, I can't go till 3:30 because I want to take our pastor with me, and he can't get away till 3:30. He said, okay. And so I took care of what work I had to do before I left, and about 3 o'clock I left, went downtown to pick up Brother Alvin, and we started out for Emporia. The girls there in the office knew the problem. They asked me daily how Linda was, and after I left, Irene called to let her know that Linda didn't go to surgery. And the little girl who was temporary for the summer, I don't know her religious affiliations at all, but she was a very nice little girl, I know that. And she was very rejoicing when she heard the news. But Brother Alvin and I reached Emporia about 6:30, almost unbelieving to hear that they didn't do the surgery. But the story behind that is what I want to tell you. Just prior to 2 o'clock, they prepared Linda for surgery with the shots, as they do, that makes her very groggy. They put her on the cart and wheeled her down the hall towards the surgery and pushed over against the hall wall and left her there. They took Linda, Irene and Terry into another room and sat down with them and said that they had talked to a doctor in Kansas City, Kansas, at the KU Medical Center there, and he had, in consulting with him along the way, and he had told them that their back was not up against the wall, as it were, that there was still hope, and advised them to what kind of medication to give her and to wait 24 hours. But the decision was Terry's to make. They had signed the papers giving permission for the surgery, which is customary and routine. And Linda said later, had they came and asked her in her condition, she said, let's get it over with, you know. She was programmed, as the saying goes, for the surgery, and she didn't have the reasoning power anymore. She would say, let's get it over with. This is what she told us later. But they took Terry, and it was his decision to make. And his first question was, said, well, will it endanger her life to wait 24 hours? And the doctor said, no. If I thought it would, I wouldn't even suggest it. And they questioned him about whether the infection and it was too much of a strain on her heart to wait. And he said, no, this kind of infection doesn't strain their heart. And she's young and her heart is strong. There's no problem there. Then Terry remembered the testimony that Nicholas had borne the first time. And he said to himself, well, you know, if they remove those organs, there's nothing left for God to heal. And he knew that Linda had said she would do all within her power to sustain that life as long as it was there. And that she would want to do all that she could to have another one, another baby, if it was possible. And so he said, we will wait. Brother Alvin and I administered to Linda when we were there, and twice. We stayed till about visiting hours was over, about 9:30, about 3 hours altogether. We stayed there. And I took Brother Alvin back to Kansas City, and then I returned the next morning. But on the way home, Brother Alvin said that operation is not going to be necessary. He had the assurance that it was not necessary. And he cautioned me about this many times. By many, I mean at least two or three when I talked to him. He said, now you know, and don't let her forget it, that that operation is not necessary. For fear that, you know, somewhere along the line, they might panic and go ahead with it. 24 hours passed, and there was not even any thought of surgery. Things was going fine. She still had problems, don't misunderstand me. But things seemed to be coming along as the doctor had hoped that they would. In fact, that morning, which would be after the 24 hours was over, it was Sunday morning, I believe. No, it was Saturday morning. The delay allowed the natural development in the body to take over and to start the function of the body as it would normally have done. And the infection was being thrown off as it would normally be thrown off. And the doctor told her, well, this is what we've been waiting for. The hormones of this had changed, which confirmed the testimony of Brother Alvin in our hearts. But it was on Sunday afternoon that there was another crisis arose. A time in which they thought sure they would have to go to surgery. I was told to leave the room while they made some preliminary examinations, and Irene came out and told me to pray. And I could tell by the looks in her face that she was very uptight. The need was great as far as she was new. And I felt, I guess I might say, I didn't really feel the pressure that she felt. I was somewhat calm, but I knew that she was not. But I did pray. They wheeled her off down the hall to the examining room again. The thing that happened there that day was that there was a great blessing, really. The head nurse was changing the needle in her arm for the intravenous feedings and the antibiotics they were feeding her. And so the nurse was right there when the crisis occurred. And she made just one phone call to the office, the nurse station, and what she said would not have meant too much to most of us, but to the nurses it meant a lot. But the miracle was her doctor was in the room that day. Right at that moment, he was right there, and he just had to walk down the hall to the room. Her doctor was taking care of two practices at this time. His there in Emporia and another friend of his who was sick some 60 miles away, I believe it was. He would drive down there every day and take care of this other doctor's practice as well. So he was very busy. But at that moment, he was in the hospital on that floor. So he was there in just a matter of minutes. And when he was told to get his surgical team together, he said, well, let's don't get too excited, to put it in my words, just go look and see. They wheeled her down the hall, and Irene and I walked down close by in the little waiting room down there and waited and prayed. It was less than 30 minutes and they were wheeling her back, put her back in her bed, and the doctor said, well, what we thought was real bad, it turned out to be good. That she was showing off more of the infection is all it was. But the activity required 2 more units of blood. This was her second time. She received 2 units to begin with and 2 units at this time. And it was at this point that, well, he said, well, we need to keep praying. He acknowledged that God was her strength. I hope that these things mean as much to you as they did to us. They are a testimony that God heard your prayers. And what they have to do with the things that I read in the beginning, I hope that they'll make our ground a little more fertile. That they'll make our roots a little deeper. That when those temptations come, that we can say, to whom shall we go? Or as Terry said, why should I be bitter? He could see the hand of God. And yet to those whose the word had fell upon them with deaf ears and closed eyes, it would have meant nothing. Because we have seen it happen in other places, in other conditions. And it caused our hearts to rejoice and our desire to praise God that He had given Terry the eyes to see and the ears to hear and to understand that testimony that God was real and that He lives. I don't like to tell stories out of school, but as I told one of our secretaries in the office, is an RLDS girl, and I talk perhaps a little bit more freely with her than I would just anybody. We talk about our love for God occasionally. And I told her that Terry was a non-believer. Really, he was. And I believe I can say was. He had had many things that told him and our beliefs. And you know what the outside world tells you that we believe. We believe a lot of things that we don't, according to them. Because the fact that we believe the Book of Mormon tells them a lot of things. They just immediately say that, well, you believe like the Utah people do. But we don't. And you can talk to them all day long and tell them all you want, and it doesn't seem to faze them. They still think, just like it says here, it falls on deaf ears. They know what they know and don't tell me any different. But once in a while Terry would come home with a question that was proposed to him by some of his co-workers about Mormons. And he had a little trouble believing that we didn't believe that way. But the other day he said, believe it or not, every once in a while I defend you people, to put it in my words. And so it's one of those seeds that is growing. It is not growing to the height of a mustard plant, probably, but it is growing. And I feel that it's developing a good root. But it puts a great responsibility upon all of us to see that we don't do anything to destroy that seed or the root. Because temptations will come. You know, as I think upon these things, a few short words that I heard during the August Ministers Conference comes back to my mind, as it has many times since. In some of our discussions there about the problems that confronts us as a people, some of the things that have entered into our lives and has caused us problems. Brother Don McAdoo said it reminded him of the verse in the 18th chapter of Revelations. Come out of her, O ye my people. The rest of it is that be not partakers of our evil deeds, nor receive the wrath to come. And so it is that we have a great challenge. That we exercise all of faith within our being, for we know that God lives, that He is a rewarder of those who believe that He is, and puts not our trust in the arm of flesh. This is my testimony this morning. I do not tell you these things because I feel that we have reached the ultimate in perfection, because I know we have not. All is not well in Zion, but God is still there. And He will watch over us, and He will give us the strength through every trial that comes. We considered very much the things that transpired this summer and felt that if for no other reason, and we had no, could not imagine what the reason might be other than to give God the opportunity to demonstrate to us that He lived. And He heard our prayers. But it drew us together. It caused that kinship to be made more evident. At the time there that Friday when we, Brother Al and I, was going to Emporia, Sister Joyce called Georgeville. They were out in the field. Some of them were, at least, and I think most of them were out in the field working on a hay bale that was broken. When the call came for Linda's needs, they left their baler, went in the house, and knelt in prayer. And after their season of prayer, they went back to the baler and finished their work. Brother Tom Maley in Minneapolis received the call. And he said he probably, the dents are still on the floor there in his bedroom where he went. Knelt in prayer. And I don't remember the other places that I've heard tell about the call that came. But God heard them. And I will never forget it. And our praise is to God. We thank each of you for your part, for your concern, for your prayers. But the praise, is to God. Because His is the power and the glory.